Hello, everyone. This is Dark Journalist. Tonight, I have a special episode for you with part one of our Eclipse interview with mystic and esoteric researcher Gigi Young. Gigi's groundbreaking Mars Mysteries series explores the deep links between the transhumanist takeover, the UFO file, and the Mars cult hiding in plain sight.
You'd see the transhumanism piece, and you'd look at that, and you'd say, no human being that is for freedom is going to be for transhumanism or AI, period. But the real goal is AI symbiosis, is AI basically connecting the brain with AI. That's the real goal.
There's the thing about NASA giving Bezos money. I thought that was an interesting signing on to, you know, because they've kind of left Bezos in the dirt on the space thing, and they've really let Elon take that. But Bezos is right behind that with Blue Origin, and he's got his whole thing about going to Mars. And now I've found another company that is making a pyramid on the moon, and they're storing everybody's DNA, and you can sign up to get with that. And I'll send you, it's called
LifeShip,
and I'll send you their info. But that is what we're getting into, right? This is what we're starting to see, which is they are using this kind of Noah's Ark motif. So here we go.
That is fascinating, because I didn't know that, but I mean, that is occult and in your face. I mean, this is a ritual.
Yeah.
And this is like a seat, like this is highly symbolic, a huge ritual. And the planets have always been used in magic, right? They've always been the center of magical practice and occult ritual. And so what we are seeing now is this in crazy era where they're actually using planets now, not symbolically referencing planets in a ritual. Like here, I'm going to have this altar and it's going to be red for Mars and I'm going to summon this Mars energy and point to the right or the left. It's literally like, no, I'm going to Mars, or no, I'm going to the moon and I'm going to harness that energy physically. It's a whole other kind of magic that is being pitched as I'm just exploring space. And we're just going to go here and it's going to be this amazing scientific experiment or this amazing evolution. And meanwhile, they're using it in an occult way. They're just taking magic to a whole new level. And the DNA thing is getting into what we've been talking about, with which is this human origins thing.
Yeah.
And now that you're saying this as well, it's weird, because one of the things that has stuck out to me in looking at this whole idea of saying that human beings are the children of aliens is that one of the narratives is that they actually find DNA on Mars, or they find DNA on Moon. And so there's this weird thing about placing DNA on planets. And it's a magical practice that they are, quite frankly, probably obsessed with.
Right. Mars has been the goal probably since the dawn of the Nazi era. That's where they were heading with a lot of this.
From what I can tell, yeah. I mean, Mars, when you look at the whole thing, it's the Thule Society and the Vril Society that have this bizarre esoterica, this bizarre origin story that just stands out. And it is that their ancestors, their origins, so the Aryan or the Nazis' idea of themselves, that they came from Mars. And before that, they came from Aldebaran. So the Mars narrative is actually the modernized Aldebaran myth. And they believe that their ancestors came from a planet called Sumi-Ur, which is the root of Sumeria, which at the time, that was the earliest known civilization. So they were right away linking themselves to, you know, Göbekli Tepe had not been found. And so they were really trying to anchor into Sumeria and Babylon for occult reasons, but also because it was the earliest discovery probably. And then they went to a planet called Maldek, and then they went to Mars, and they built the civilization on Mars and destroyed it. And then they came to the Earth and created humanity. And so they're basically like these gods that seed human beings in the universe and seed planets in the universe. And they're these seeders, which, you know, you just talked about this DNA pyramid that's on Mars or whatever. So, I mean, on the moon. And this weird myth would just hang out in the Nazi material and the esoteric Hitlerism material or the esoteric Nazi material would just hang out there. And a lot of people would look at it and they would say, I don't know what to do with that. This is too weird. This is too bizarre. Wasn't Hitler a kooky guy? Wasn't Wernher von Braun and the Nazis, weren't they so weird and kooky? They loved Atlantis because they went from Mars to also Atlantis as well. There's a huge theme of that as well. And everyone's like, what a weirdo. You know, they had such strange beliefs, you know, and then everybody just focuses on technology. Like, look at the Hanabu craft and wow, weren't the Nazis prodigies with technology? And meanwhile, that's actually kind of a bit of propaganda too, because there was also advanced technologies in other countries as well. As you've mentioned, the mystery schools, like in America and Europe, they were also developing things, but it's always, you know, the Nazis.
Right.
Yeah, people hang on to like this this technology aspect of the Nazis, the Hanabu crafts and the bell and everything, and they leave that esoteric part behind.
Yeah.
That is where that Mars origin story began. And then you see it pop up again with von Daniken and his Chariots of the Gods, which was co-written or ghost-written in part by a Nazi propagandist that actually wrote for Hitler's newspaper.
Right. Yeah. You went deep into von Daniken's background in one of your episodes. And that's interesting, too, because von Daniken had some sketchy things in his past, for sure. What did you find?
Yes, the bizarre thing is for a material that is so deep into the New Age and ufology, like Chariots of the Gods, it was right at the surface. It was in Wikipedia. If you just read his Wikipedia page, the most easy thing anybody can do, it actually says that Chariots of the Gods was written by von Daniken, and that it was ghost written by this who was a Nazi propagandist in his time, and it said that he'd also been convicted of fraud and embezzlement while working at a hotel in Davos, and that one of his books was also written from prison. And that's definitely concerning, you know, if we're factoring in character things like that.
Was that his partner or von Daniken who wrote the book from prison?
Von Daniken.
Yeah. I've heard about this before, and like, you know, maybe it doesn't weigh on his research per se, but it gives an angle on who you're dealing with.
Yeah, it's definitely not enough to say that this person's wrong, because there's lots of people that have made mistakes in their life, or that have been wrongly imprisoned or spent time in prison that are wonderful people and that are brilliant people. It was just something that was interesting.
No, I agree. It is very interesting. The way you brought it around, I think, is fascinating. And also the foundation of that ancient aliens thing comes through von Daniken. What's interesting is that Jessup did the whole Bible related to UFOs book in the 50s. So he was there. And I think there's this whole aspect of the Sumerian UFO piece that he was in it. And, you know, he's one of these guys that they rubbed out. So you think to yourself, was he going in a particular direction? And they were like, no. We want to use that, you know, get off that track.
I'll have to look into that. That's really interesting. It's almost like I didn't want that piece out there. And that's the funny thing is that, you know, I'm obviously speaking about it in my Mars mysteries in kind of an unfavorable light, but I actually don't think that everything is wrong. And that's the funny thing, that there's little pieces of truth in it. And we have to be able to weed out what is true and what's not true. But I have no doubt that there probably really were competing narratives at that time, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, you went so deep. Everyone has to check out the Mars Mysteries series, because you're going in there and digging up and making connections and connecting dots for all kinds of things around this. But what you've come up with, and this leads into some of the things we were talking about Musk, this leads into this whole idea of a Mars cult, that this is where they're going with it. This is where the fascination is.
Yes, exactly. It is a Mars cult. It is an esoteric belief system for them, because it's where they believe they came from. They believe that their ancestors, the secret society that is behind the Thule Society, believes that their ancestors came from Mars, and so it's a huge spiritual belief for them. Right. And there's a desire to return there. And I think that there's a great deal also perhaps of supremacy, or those ideas, those themes are definitely there as well in the Mars origin myth, as I discussed in episode 5, unfortunately. It's definitely a sort of like a dark secret society that's definitely thousands of years old, that from my research and from what I can even feel, I believe that they manifested in Germany for a time, but they were actually a global brotherhood. They were a global society that manifested in Germany because it was the right place for them to carry out that kind of operation at that time. But it was really a global brotherhood, a global kind of what I would call a dark brotherhood, maybe even our monic brotherhood. And this is also why you see when Germany does lose the war, the top scientists, the top people do not pay for their crimes. And it's not because I think their skills were so valuable, though I think that they were highly skilled. I think it's primarily because they were part of this global brotherhood. And that even though they had lost this public war, that's not how the brotherhoods work. It's that they got shuffled around, not because they were amazing and incredible, but I think primarily because they were part of this underground system and they weren't going to try their own.
Right. They were covered.
Exactly.
You mentioned, you brought up Paperclip in your series too. And this is something which, when you get into that history, is just hanging out there as this interesting anomaly. Yes, we took over so many of those scientists. We saved so many of them from judgment at Nuremberg. In fact, guys like Dornberger and von Braun, and we reanimated their command status back when they joined NASA and founded NASA. But you seem to read a lot into this taking on of Paperclip, which was making the space thing take on the identity of the Nazi ideology.
Yes. And that became clear to me when I saw suddenly Elon Musk enter the scene.
Right.
And it's Mars, 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 Mars. Everything is Mars. Let's go to Mars. And that is what made me realize, like, this is a Nazi, this is part of the Thule Society's belief. They believe that they're from Mars, and that their progenitors are from Mars, that if they probably go to Mars, they'll find these bones or ruins from their progenitors. And so when I saw Elon Musk coming to the surface and talking about Mars all the time, that was a really big red flag for me. And then when you look at Wernher von Braun's book, Project Mars, which is sort of like a fiction piece, yeah, but it has a lot of facts in it. So it's
very technical, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's like fiction, but it's technical, which is the typical occult method of sharing information, right? Without having to take full responsibility.
Oh, yeah.
That fiction element in there, and then you can say whatever you want. Right. And then when you look at it and you see, listen, Wernher von Braun mentions by name Elon, which is not a common name. I don't think I'd ever really heard of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, he mentions him by name and says and describes the government on Mars, and that the Elon, which I think he uses also as like a government moderation board or parliament system, is going to, you know, colonize Mars and govern Mars. And this is in Wernher von Braun's book.
Wow.
And then you see that aspect and you're like, this is a direct connection. You know, what is really going on here? And you see, this is a religion. This is a religion that is taking political, social control.
Right. Right. Well, let's talk about the romance of Musk that's been going on. And this is really fascinating because, of course, stepping in, buying Twitter, say, I believe in free speech and all the rest. The sale's not even yet complete. And all these people are lining up saying, Elon, save free speech and all the rest. And if it was a move towards saying, you know what, we're getting killed in the marketplace because they're acting like fascists and we're going to move it back towards free speech. Good.
Yes.
I'm glad the marketplace is informing him, but let's not, you know, imagine that it's kind of a humanitarian gesture. If it is, well, that's great. But what's been going on is really Elon has been, you know, he's going to save the entire sphere of social media influence because he believes in free speech. And this is more of the hero attachment that he needs. They applied some of this during the Ukraine thing. They may have stepped in it because they've got one hero they're promoting there, Zelensky, who, you know, as we know, is a comedian and an actor, and he's worth billions of dollars, which is kind of unusual.
Very unusual.
Yeah. This guy is not the way that they portray him, but they already have, you know, all the merchandise and everything lined up for this guy and the cinematic trailers of him as a hero. And, you know, George W. Bush is visiting him and be like, he's my kind of guy, you know. So, but it is weird because during the ramp up, when that war started to kick in, Elon came in and said, I'm going to give Starlink to Ukraine. And this is placing him in a position of interfering in a war situation. Also, like kind of getting the United States strangely involved in it. With this company being, you know, so powerful in the U.S. and then him going over there and saying, don't worry, if Russia takes down your internet, I'll save you. And then the Ukrainian government on the ground, like, thumbs up, Elon. So now we're involving a CEO of a corporation and this major tech innovator guy in the middle of war situations. And it, particularly when it comes to Russia, a potential World War III scenario. You know, like a shooting war. So not just a Cold War. That's different. That's very different. And it's part of this archetype caricature that they're setting up with Elon of a hero leader who is the space president and he can give orders from space.
Space president. That's exactly it. It's exactly it. It's really strange to see, you know, it's like they're using the fact that he's so wealthy and that he's a corporation to do things politically that politicians couldn't do without oversight, you know?
Right.
So he's out, you know, it was actually strange when he did it because probably a lot of Elon supporters are also maybe more pro-Russia as well.
Yeah.
So it was an unusual move from that in a way I think would betray some of his own base.
Mm-hmm.
So that was unusual to see, but it's a way of bypassing an election and it's a way of bypassing the Constitution. It's a way of bypassing any kind of checks and balances.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's a great point. Well, you have the ability to research these things, not just historically and geopolitically, but you have this mystical talent and vision of being able to sweep in there with what they're doing with Mars beyond just what's on the record. What is it that's going on there? How do you interpret it or intuit it in terms of how they picture Mars?
I think that they picture Mars very differently than other people do because they're so much better informed than we are. And so what they know about space and about Mars is hundreds of years ahead of what we think. And we have to keep that in mind when they're doing these things. There's this idea that we're all discovering this together. We're all doing this together, and we're not. I mean, these groups, you know, even NASA and the people behind NASA, they know so much more about these things than us. And so we're not discovering this together. We're not in this together. We are being made to think that we're in this together, and they're very much aware of everything that's going on. And for that reason, I think pretty much the first narratives that we're going to see about disclosure, about space, all of that are going to be control, are going to be based on control and creating a new religion. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, what, and we have to get through that false element before we can, I think, build something meaningful.
What would the elements of the space religion be? That there are anointed ones who originally set up civilization on Mars and then little by little seeded the Earth, and we find the remnants and realize, oh, there's this one group on Earth that leads everything.
Exactly. That seems to be what the narrative is. And that seems to be a narrative that has been carefully propagated from the work of Eric von Daniken and Utz Uderman in their book Chariots of the Gods, which talks about ancient aliens, which basically literalizes all esoteric and spiritual material into a physical event, or says that physical events or visitations are more important or the most important primary aspect of our origins. When a lot of these ancient mystical texts are talking about things like a form materializing from another plane, or spiritual things going on, like the fall, which is actually like the biblical fall, which is a shift in density, they're describing that as, you know, alien creator gods coming to the planet and genetically modifying people. So we're losing the mysteries when mm-hmm. we believe these things, because we're losing our interconnectedness with nature, with each other. And this whole other narrative is coming in where everything is, you know, human beings were created like in by genetic engineering, by these gods that have laboratories on their spaceships. And it's just, we're losing this real understanding that exists in the mystery schools, that is, no, things form and things disappear, and things shift in density, and human forms evolve over time, and we evolve through spiritual transmutation over time, and we're losing that aspect of it. And so that's what that whole scene is. It's a divergent paradigm. It's unnatural, and it's literalizing and materializing spiritual things to the point that they don't even resemble what they originally are. And you see
the scientific reinterpretation of the entire creation story, right?
Exactly. It's a scientific that's exactly what it is. And I think it goes very deep to even there being interdimensional beings or extraterrestrial beings that they connect with that have been doing that for a very long time and are initiating them into that belief set. And I think this could in fact involve a lot deeper conversations that once we understand this, we can have. But this idea of these ancient aliens that have created the pyramids and anything that exists on Earth, like Puma Punku, you know, the things, any legacy civilization from Atlantis, basically.
The Nazca lines and this whole things that can only be seen from the air. Yeah.
These are built by aliens. They're not built by humans. These are built by our alien progenitor gods.
Right.
Or these creator gods. And we are just children here. And that gets rid of our entire history, as you've talked about on your show so much, which is, you know, Lemuria and mm-hmm. Atlantis and all of the stages that we've gone through as human beings to densify and materialize here. And also all of our achievements and accomplishments are now gone and attributed to these alien gods that are a proxy for God. These alien gods act as a proxy for God. and we don't have that divine connection or any power.
Right. Well, that's fascinating, because you think of kingship and royalty in ancient times and how there was a lot of intermarriage as related to this, even as far back as the Egyptians. One of the people who is connected in all that research is Sitchin also.
Yes.
And he also was huge on this. And all they did on all these shows for years were, it was Sumeria, Anunnaki. So much so you were like, look, this is fascinating, but you know, forget it. I'm sick of hearing about it. And in like Ancient Aliens or Coast or anything like that, I was like, oh, Anunnaki. And it's just like, take it over the cliff. Unbelievable. But it is interesting, because when you think about the royal bloodline thing, that came about as the result of beings that were kind of supernormal, but they may have been supernormal human beings.
Yeah.
And they may not have been alien at all. And they, that system of these, this group that kept themselves apart from other groups who were, you know, it's kind of the Emilius Belial split that Casey talks about. The Emilius group wants to use the spiritual understanding, the technological understanding of Atlantis to merge with the outer spheres and get that, you know, go into the saintly realm. And the Beelzebub Belial guys are like, oh, you know, we can nuke our neighbors. So they're groups. But so this, a particular line keeps themselves pure, and they become, you know, the idea of royalty as a result of that. And then it gets corrupted over time, and then you end up with, like, you know, Queen Victoria or the Mad King George or something like that. And so, you know, it becomes outmoded for human experience. It seems like maybe, and you can tell me if this is true or not, that the Mars push is about instituting a new royalty based on new discoveries, and that'll be the cutting edge of science because, you know, these guys have a new history, but it's not the actual history.
It's not the actual history, because as you've mentioned, even in Casey's work, there is this discussion about these two groups that are competing. And right. these two different versions that pretty much are competing, and kind of like during the golden ages, they come for the higher line comes forward and is revealed and sets the new pattern. And there's these beautiful initiations that happen and beautiful evolutions. And then as we kind of go into a darker age, we become more dull and more diluted. And then the darker lines come in. We become closer to the kind of lower astral plane. And then they sort of get control for a while. So there's this rising and falling that's very signature to these two lines interacting. And they really do represent what you could call an organic timeline, which is connected to Christ consciousness or the Christ impulse. And then there is an inorganic timeline, which is kind of like, I guess you could call the Antichrist timeline, that includes hyper-scientism, transhumanism, an obsession with hybridization and genetic engineering. And you can really see that obsession with hybridization and genetic engineering when you look at their origin story, because that origin story is basically all about them being these creator gods that genetically manipulate everyone and everything to create people, and that human beings were basically once apes that were genetically modified to be people. And then there's this pure line of god beings that are the ones that are the king lineage, and it's completely and utterly just saturated ufology. Mm. It saturated the new age. Even the best researchers are falling prey to this, because they see that there is something strange about our DNA.
Mm-hmm.
And automatically think that, okay, well, because there's maybe been some DNA stuff going on, that automatically means that was our creation point. You know, that because there was something messed around, or it looks like, or we're told there's something messed around in there, because we don't understand it, that automatically means that we were spliced.
Right.
And so that is that dangerous belief system that is the tenet of the Mars origin myth and the entire propaganda that I speak about in Mars Mysteries.
It is. Yeah, absolutely. Well, because what it does is it takes that creation story and it scientifies it.
Yeah, it makes it like you can't, like we're all just sitting here waiting to have our genetics spliced so that we can finally evolve.
Right.
Like, right. Like we don't have any ability to evolve on our own, that we're basically these children sitting here. And it's ridiculous because it completely negates the original tradition, which is what you were talking about. It's in Edgar Cayce's work with the Emilius group. It's the core foundation of traditional initiation and spiritual development, which is that human beings evolve through healing our karma, through healing ourselves, and through taking on more and more Christ consciousness over time. And it does involve connecting with different planets at certain times. And there is an interplanetary aspect, but these planetary bodies are more like a school. It's more like we're being initiated. And they're all interwoven with each other in a very specific scientific way. And so all of these very beautiful traditional mystical ideas about how we evolve as a planet and as human beings are being overshadowed by this hyper-scientific, hyper-materialistic idea of creation. And it's to the point where, I mean, if you look at Eric von Daniken's work and you look at Zachariah Sitchin's work, it has been invested in and propagated so much that we have Ancient Aliens at this point, which is arguably one of the biggest shows you can find on the alien topic. So if people are skeptical of this, then please ask yourself, why is there so much money going into this exact mythos when it contradicts the natural and traditional teachings of creation?
Absolutely.
Gaia is a big one.
Yeah.
No, they propagate the alien origin, alien creator god mythos heavily. They have some good teachers on there. It's not all or nothing, but they are also huge propagators of this myth to the point that most of the shows that they've chosen to advertise are directly propagating this myth. So we have to ask ourselves, why is so much money being investigated in propagating this unnatural idea about who we are?
Right. And this becomes a kind of space propaganda.
Yes. And it leads to, as you mentioned, it could potentially lead to one day people going to Mars or maybe even the moon, because they've hinted at both. One day going to Mars and the moon and then finding this DNA there or finding bodies there. And because they've already laid the track down for themselves, this propaganda piece for decades. I mean, von Daniken's books came out in the late 60s, and then Sitchin, and then now Ancient Aliens and Gaia. Because they've already inflated this, that if they were to find some kind of DNA, we already know the story. And you'd be surprised how fast people can shift when they find evidence, scientific evidence for something. The craziest theories can be proven true. And it's different when somebody doesn't believe something because it makes them uncomfortable, mm-hmm. than someone who doesn't believe something because they're educated on the topic, right? So.
Well, I think about the that think tank of Navy people and CIA people who try to recruit Fitz in Catherine Austin Fitz in the late 90s, and they were saying, we want to study the impact of what the knowledge of ET life on Earth will be in the general public. And this is something that they did, the Brookings Institute, during the Kennedy administration. They also studied it, and they said, it'll wreck religion, basically, if that was to be found out. That was their take on it in that era. And in Eisenhower's era, there's that whole rumor that he met with Pleiadians and they offered him all this spiritual advice. And he was like, well, can you give us tech?
Yeah, exactly. And isn't that actually, now that you mentioned that, isn't that such a symbolic action between the Emilius group and the Belial group?
Yes.
They both exist. They both exist. They both have access to the planet.
Right.
And one is saying, listen, how you evolve is through spirituality. It is from the you know, top down and then from the bottom up. That's how we evolve. And then you have this other group that's like, I'll give you power. It's the Faustian bargain. I'll give you a weapons. I'll give you whatever. Just let us have access to your,
let us have
access to you, and I'll give you whatever you want. And so it's the perfect example of these two groups that you've mentioned, the Emilius group and the Belial group, how they operate, what they offer you, and what they stand for is that Eisenhower story.
It is. That's almost like a space mirror for those things too, because you could say that the grays really represent more of the Belial thread, and that the Pleiadians, as portrayed, represent that more Emilius style thread.
Yes, that's the interesting thing is that the more that we get into the cosmos, the more that we get into space, we have to start to understand that we're not really looking at like physical locations. What we're looking at is time and density. And so a lot of what we're looking at are actually basically different versions of ourselves.
Right.
So the correct way or the correct way to have contact, and how it was done in Atlantis through my memories, is that you always approached the being as though they were another aspect of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that the only reason why you looked different than that being was because they were really encompassing a different evolutionary period of the Earth and a different evolutionary period of man. And the joy in contact was figuring out what that difference was and how you could learn from each other. And so it was known in Atlantis, and it's still known in the mystery schools, that's how that was done. And you didn't look at this person or this being as though they were like necessarily physically from another world. That wasn't the primary paradigm that you viewed. Every planet is interconnected. So Earth is interconnected with Mars, and very closely with the planets in our solar system, but also the whole cosmos is interconnected. And really, every planet formed at a certain time and a certain density and is connected to the other one. And so we have to understand what those connections are. And we're also interconnected with all these beings in a certain way. And so it's not entirely correct or healthy to view like grays as alien or to view them as fully separate from us. This is this harmonic ideology that we are so materialized and so dense that our differences are the most important thing. And in fact, the only way we can interact with interdimensional beings is to understand that there is a level of us that is all the same, and that every being that we can perceive is another aspect of ourselves on another evolutionary path. And that could be very divergent, like the grays, and unrecognizable, and we could see them as monsters. But they took an evolutionary path that deformed them, or that has changed them, or they could be the product of some kind of chimeric experiment or whatever. And so they often pose as though they're these aliens, or they're often connected with the alien god mythos and things like that. But, you know, we have to understand the real metaphysics of that connection if we're going to be going out in space and talking about disclosure and all that kind of stuff, because we're kind of teetering on some dangerous territory.
Oh, no question. Actually, I was listening to, that's fascinating, because it gets into the essence of how we experience these things. And I listened to an interview with Musk, and he was saying, where are the aliens? You know, I've been out there. I've sent all these, you know, ships out there. I've been doing it. We haven't seen anything even close to it. So we might just be alone. And this is interesting, because he is closing down this level of, you know, curiosity in a sense by saying scientifically there's no proof for these guys. But what's weird for me with the grays, and I want to get into this. So for years growing up and everything else, we had Whitley Strieber and Communion and the deep experiences he had and Betty and Barney Hill, although their grays are different. They're a lot more human looking and they don't have the big eyes. They just basically seem like humans without a nose.
Okay.
And so I wonder, I've always wondered how they were different, because the actual gray with the strap-on eyes and the whole bit really emerges in the 80s. And if you're really looking in the 70s, even Close Encounters doesn't have a classic gray. It does have, you know, an alien, but that's 77. They're just developing that whole piece. So obviously, this was the thing that they were going with. They went away from the 50s golden-haired angel Pleiadian Venusian, right? And we got this thing. But how do you size up the grays? Because there's a very distinct description to them about 4 feet tall, large heads, big eyes, very scientific. And their principal thing is abduction, right? The Pleiadians don't abduct anybody, but the grays somehow, this is what they're classically known for. This is also a huge wave that takes place and then sometime around 9/11 goes off the cliff, and you don't really hear much about abduction stories almost at all. So round that out for me with the stuff that you're talking about, because you know, you've done really fascinating videos on the Greys and the Pleiadians and things. What is it you're dealing with as a culture when you deal with the Greys?
Yes, absolutely. Just so if anyone's tuning in and they're not familiar with me, I'm an abductee and I'm an experiencer. So, you know, this is something that has been, this is material and beings that I've been interacting with for most of my life. So this is not necessarily a research place with me. It's research and then also experience and also intuition. So the gray piece is fascinating because you look at ufology and you see that the grays are kind of looked at quite negatively. They're sort of looked at as, a lot of the times looked at as controllers and abductors that, you know, will, you know, anal probe you or put like, you know, chips in you and things like that. Then you look over at the New Age and the grays are often viewed as a benevolent part of the Galactic Federation or this amazing group of creator gods that have been, you know, helping humanity for a very long time. And so there is a lot of confusion about who the grays are and what they're doing here. And on top of that, there's also different types of grays. There's also, I think we've talked about before, the big nose grays, like grays mm-hmm. with large noses.
Yeah.
There's, and this is because if I had to say, I would say that this is because the reason why the grays look anything like the way they look is because they're the product of extensive hybridization programs. And that there was a human race, you could call them fallen angels or kind of fallen humans, that were very scientifically, very technologically advanced. And they took the dark path. They turned their back on God and on everything as natural, that is natural. And they began to worship science and they began to worship the physical plane. And they began to believe that the genetics that you had were the most important thing about you. That spirit primarily manifested in your appearance. Not as, you know, your appearance and your physicality wasn't like a secondary thing, like the traditional mysteries teach. It is the main thing. So if you look a certain way or you are a certain way, then that means that you are absolutely better than other people. And so they became obsessed with it and created kind of like a Gattaca society where they were choosing who could have children. They were choosing, you could even see it as a future version of ourselves mm-hmm. if we were to take this path. And they were like, these are the good genes, these are the bad genes. And the more they did that, the more that they realized over time that they were no longer a robust group. They were no longer robust as a species, and they were losing their genetic viability. Because in our physical plane and even slightly higher planes, we can't actually perceive everything that goes into DNA. All of the spiritual nuances and all of the stuff that is really God's work or comes from a higher place. We can't perceive everything that's going on. We don't have that ability in this plane. And so they cut themselves off from all kinds of different things that they needed. They cut themselves off from God and they began to deform. And they get energy from naturally because of playing God to such an, and then they also developed part of that disease in the mind is also transhumanism, believing that there's no, they don't have to heal themselves to develop spiritual abilities. They don't have to go inward, you know, they don't have to discipline themselves, as Gurdjieff would say. You don't have to discipline yourself and ground yourself to go to those places. I'm just going to put a chip in my brain and then I'm going to read the Akashic records, or I'm just going to, I don't have to heal my body. I'm just going to add this thing, or I'll just make my bones titanium instead of actually understanding what a bone is, you know? And so that they destroyed themselves.
So the way that you're portraying them, then they're kind of in a timeline of time travel, and they're sort of representing a future that we create by becoming transhumanists.
That is accurate. That's exactly how this planet works, is that we can only perceive what we are. Mm-hmm. Anyone who takes psychic development classes or spiritual development classes will understand that we can really only see what we are. This world is full of lots of things that we aren't and lots of energies that we don't yet embody. We're surrounded by it, but we just don't perceive it. So if we're perceiving something spiritually, it's because that is within us. It's within us as a potential. And once you factor in that time travel does exist, it's not just a dream. It's not just a, you know, science fiction thing. You have to start wondering, okay, if a dark group or a misinformed group could time travel, if they were technologically advanced, but not spiritually advanced, if they were hungry for power, if they were sick, what would they do?
Right.
And eventually, because they damage themselves with DNA, they damage their DNA through transhumanism and trying to breed themselves into some perfect condition, which again cannot be done because it is the transmutation of our pain that causes our DNA to light up, that causes us to evolve. You can't force that to happen. You have to earn that. So they eventually become obsessed with DNA, and they now still think that they can take people's DNA and merge it back with themselves so that they can get back to where they were, that they can heal this massive mistake they've made, the mistake of transhumanism, the mistake of this genetic stuff they did, that if they can just go back to where humanity was not altered by transhumanism and the genetic stuff yet, that they can get themselves back. And so you have this massive hybridization program from the Greys, and various different types of Greys as they are experimenting with themselves.
Right.
And changing as they're doing these experiments, but they're on this treadmill of trying to solve their problem the exact way they created this problem, their problem, by taking people's DNA and trying to abduct them and merge themselves back and eventually maybe come back on the planet and everything. And so that's...
Well, you know, it's interesting. This is absolutely fascinating because what it's making me think of are all those cases in the 80s and 90s of these women who claimed to be aboard these ships, abducted, and then they would see all these hybrid versions of their children, different aspects. And in some cases, they wouldn't, like, their hair would be not grown in, or they would have some other physical deformity that wasn't quite there. And, you know, you could look at that and say, somebody got abducted, and this is kind of the hysterical byproduct of it. Or you could say this is part of that abduction experience takes place in this level. They did try to kind of, you know, hybridize these beings. There's a whole line of research, like guys like David Jacobs, Professor Jacobs, who we've had on this show before. And he's written very compelling books and done very compelling research over 4 decades at Temple University on hybrids. And he thinks, absolutely. And not only that, but he thinks they're trying to fit into society as well. So where would you think, what do you think of that quality of research? And what about these women who had all of these pregnancies and thought that they were alien in nature and thought that they saw hybrid children. I mean, do you think on that level, did the Greys get to a place like that? And do you think people experienced that?
I do think so. I think that, like, it's, I know people who have hybrid children, mm-hmm. and who have talked about it. And it feels like such a complicated issue, I think, because a lot of people that have those experiences, it's like they feel a connection to the baby, obviously. It's happened with men too, where like their sperm is taken. And then like, it's like, why did you want that? And like, why can you even use that? First of all, like, I mean, if you're really from another planet, if you're really from Zeta Reticuli, or you're really from another planet, mm-hmm. you have a completely different genetic structure or a very divergent one.
Right.
You probably wouldn't be able to just take a reproductive material from someone and necessarily use it. But I think that it's very real. And I think that people can be very torn on it because they're, you know, it's like they're trying to like heal themselves or trying to work on themselves, but the Greys don't have emotional development. They're not emotionally developed. They're basically known for being only intellectual and scientific, and that they believed, and this is also part of the Mars mysteries, they believed, it went extremely into the masculine polarity, and they believed that emotions were harmful, and that if they could just get rid of emotions, that they would be able to do anything, get rid of fear. Wow. They didn't realize that when you get rid of fear and when you get rid of emotions, you also get rid of love, and you also get rid of beauty, and you also get rid of being able to feel God within. And so the main thing about these abductions as well is that there's a palpable feeling as though these beings no longer have an emotional body.
Yeah.
And that's why a lot of people say that they're robotic, which there's a lot of evidence they could be androids as well. But also the fact that they got rid of their emotions somehow because they thought it made them weak.
Mm-hmm.
And so they specifically apparently target people who have very highly developed emotional systems. They thought it was animalistic, but now they're going and targeting that exact thing and trying to get it back.
Oh, interesting. And it's almost like they're trying to splice out qualities in humanity. This is exactly, it's funny that you line up the Greys with transhumanists because that's what they're trying to do.
That's it's their religion. It's exactly what it becomes. And they're initiating humanity themselves into the same system that destroyed them because they think that maybe this time they can do it right. Or maybe this time they can get enough people. And it's a very, very slippery slope. It's the transhumanism. And then it's also the obsession with genetic modification.
Right.
These things are key. These are our religion and Mars. Mars, transhumanism, and the obsession with DNA and genetics. These things are the trinity for them.
Wow. Incredible. Well, we know that something is alive in the transhumanist movement that is absolutely alien to humanity. And, you know, I wouldn't say it doesn't necessarily have to be an alien race, for example, but there's something alien that has invaded their way of thinking where they basically want to strip off those aspects of their humanity and project their consciousness into a cube, you know, and do this whole kind of thing. And what's weird about some of that talk, and this comes out of the Musk thing with Neuralink as well, is there are, I guess you could call them warnings or predictions, particularly from Steiner's work in Anthroposophy that says, when Ahriman shows up, one of the big problems is he's going to give everyone clairvoyance, but it's not going to be natural clairvoyance. So they're all going to see something different. And therefore this, you know, this creates a situation where they'll all think, Armon, you're the greatest. You're giving us clairvoyance. And but what they're getting is their own kind of cloudy version of it, because it's not a clairvoyance that it's attained to. It's this thing that Ahriman is dishing out from a central source. So do you think that where we're getting to with virtual reality and the metaverse and all these types of things, is that where that warning from spiritual science comes from?
Yes, I think that Steiner saw it. And he focused in on it. He narrowed in on it. He made it as clear as it possibly could be, because I think he saw, this automation element. And there were, you know, I think, you know, Casey talked about it too. People would talk about humanity becoming more automated.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And and Gurdjieff, you mentioned Gurdjieff as well, talking about like people are just machines and people are automated.
Right.
And then Steiner goes and says, well, that's going to materialize. That's going to literalize, because that is a mindset that people are becoming, because they're not spiritually developing. And they're not perhaps using their emotions properly. They're hiding from certain emotions. And that's going to make them more automatic. And then they're going to create that. They're going to go down that path because that's what they're becoming. So, and then there's also kind of like a repeat of, I think, classical traditional spiritual ideas, but misinterpreted. And I think that's so standard for transhumanism, which Steiner also gets into as well, which is like this idea of you could just develop your clairvoyance and you develop your connection to the Akashic record, but then transhumanism promises you that you can just put a brain a chip in your brain, and that you can achieve that without any responsibility. And right. We all know that if you want to achieve anything in life, I think it Steiner, he said, if you want one spiritual ability, develop your character to three times what it is.
Oh, wow.
you want like a little more psychic ability, you want a little bit more of that, we'll develop your character to like three times what it is now, and then you'll be able to get that spiritual ability or that spiritual experience that you want. And so there's this direct association with developing your character, developing yourself, developing your spirit, and then suddenly these abilities come back to you. You remember them, you get them back. And so, but this is different. This is something that is like, there's an urge in humanity to be clairvoyant again, to be able to heal our body and connect with our body, to see the future. But it's like, we don't know how to go about it anymore. And so they're just gonna physically create a way to do it.
Right.
You know, even the idea of, you know, in anthroposophy, Steiner describes a time where everyone was naturally clairvoyant and kind of moving together in society, in like Lemuria and even maybe even early Atlantis there, how everyone was just interlinked and they just knew everything and no one would really harm anybody because they would immediately feel that pain.
Mm-hmm.
And then we individuated. And then it's kind of like the Borg or Neuralink is trying to recreate that interconnectedness, that natural enmeshment that we once had.
Right.
Without us having to incorporate the I.
Ah.
We lost that ability when we got our I and our individuality. And so that ability to be interconnected so obviously dulled as we developed ourselves, and our challenge is to now get that back as we progress, you know, into Vulcan and into the higher spheres. That represents getting that, those abilities back, but now we have an eye, so we don't lose ourselves. But this is this divergent path that they're introducing, is the loss of yourself. You lose your eye. So it is almost like an unzipping of the human being. It's the loss of yourself. And so there's a direct inverting. Yeah, there's a direct inverting of traditional mystery teachings. It's a direct inversion of it. It's actually pulling it backwards. It's a reversal by removing the eye. Yeah.
This is fascinating because the when you do that with the inversion process, you are looking at the mirror image of a thing without being able to embody the actual thing. You like the reflection of it. I can give you the reflection of it, but it's like, you know, looking at a picture of a good meal, a nutritious meal, you can't consume it, right? This is fascinating too, though, because it reminds me, someone sent me one of these 1963 magazines about the JFK assassination. In there is an ad for flying, because, you know, it's still kind of early, and it says, fly now, pay later. I'm thinking this is the transhumanist trip, right? Yeah. It's fly now, pay later. And so in traditional spiritual circles, you develop your character, like you said, in the mystery traditions. Well, in the Casey work, in the Search for God groups, they were like, we want to be, you know, really advanced psychically. What do we need to do? And he said, well, the first rule is cooperation, which it doesn't sound, you know, isn't all-seeing eye clairvoyance. It's learning how to cooperate, right?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. What's funny is they came to him and they said, well, you know, I want to develop this quality. What exercises do I need to do to put myself in a psychic state? And he was like, well, you need to push someone who's elderly in a wheelchair along Virginia Beach for about 3 hours and let them check out the sun, incorporating this service thing immediately. So it's a very different thing going into it and learning from a selfless position. You know, we think about in the New Testament, they ask Christ, you know, is this the only way to heaven, you know, the kingdom of heaven? And he says, well, those who climb up some other way become thieves and robbers of that, you know, basically enlightenment. And so the idea is there's a process to do it, but it doesn't mean that somebody can't try and go in some other way and try to do it, you know, and go through the tree of life without going through the stages of evolution, but just, aha, I have, with my scientific, harmonically inspired mind, I figured out I can go through this whole process and I can get rid of my animal self and become mineral, you know, in the case of becoming technology, becoming a, you know, a superior being through technology. So this is kind of somehow we're getting close to where they're going, because the obsession is, I don't need to take those spiritual steps to do this, and I don't have to cohabit with that spiritual understanding. I can do this on my own. I can become a god by myself. And that sounds like Kurzweil and his whole thing about merging with machines.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And I actually think that they see it as weakness. This is what I've noticed as well. Because sometimes when you read the literature and the esoteric ideas around this, there's like a strange anti-human element to it that you find, like, the traditional mysteries celebrate the humanness, and it's about becoming more human, superhuman even. It's about embracing humanity, including yourself. And then you look at this sort of transhumanism thing, and it's about, there's really a lot of undercurrents that it's really kind of anti-human. And with that comes this very weird ideology that might is right. And that they begin to believe that the reason why everything bad in their life happened to them is because they haven't been dominant enough and they haven't been strong enough. And so they're caught on a track that is an inversion of reality. And I genuinely believe that their mind, how they think, their paradigms are completely different than somebody who is not on that track, than somebody who is healthy. And they, when you degenerate by walking that path for too long, something really strange happens to your perception, in that you can degenerate to the point where the only real sensation that you can feel is physical, and the only world that you can really feel is physical. And so when somebody tells you, like, there's a spiritual reality, you may in theory believe it, But the only thing that you can sense are very animalistic things like power and domination. And you're just not going to believe there's anything higher because you have absolutely no experience with it. And this is a danger in human development, is to degenerate to the point where you turn your back on God, you turn your back on your inner Christ consciousness. And because we're all creators, we can literally create a world that is anti-Christ, that is anti-God, that is anti-nature, and that is completely false. We're getting into the eight sphere kind of conversation. And you can live that if you want. That is the negative downside of having an eye, is that you can have an eye and you can literally create a reality that is different and inverted than nature. And you can believe that it is true for a very long time. And so I think we can say that these are individuals that are functioning on a totally different level of consciousness than other people are. And they're unable to perceive certain things. It's literally like being colorblind.
Fascinating. You know, they're becoming trapped in the scientific materialist paradigm, and they're hardening.
Yes, and it's not that God has turned their back on them, or that Christ has turned his back on them. That's is totally not the case. That's always present within them. It's always there. It's always surrounding them. It's that there's been a choice in their existence to not let that in. And there's a choice that they've done to push that away.
Oh, interesting. Well, this is really interesting, because when you look at society now and you see the things that are happening, so I want to take the transhumanist influence. I'm connecting up what you're saying, the Mars cult and the transhumanists seem to be hand in glove in this process. We're talking about the same thing. And, so what you get in society are movements to remove the recognition of gender, to kind of demasculinize men and defeminize women. And it goes into other areas, but I'll leave it around the genders, because there's that echo in the mystery teachings. Amelius, for example, in the Casey readings, 200,000 BC, he recognizes male and female has to be split because they're in one at that point. And so this becomes an aspect of that Adam and Eve story. So in destroying the gender idea now, which they're trying to do, just get rid of it for certain types, they're sort of creating a line of humanity that can branch off and wither and just become something that's automated and kind of test tube baby, you know, for their purposes, and that doesn't have any identity, not even a gender identity. That's part of this degeneration. And where does that go?
I think it's fascinating, because we were just talking about the grays and how one of the things that happened to the grays is that they actually were unable to reproduce, and they're actually totally androgynous. So it's almost like there's this effort again to, through external means, reach the spiritual level of the androgen, which right. is, you know, sometimes when you look at the beautiful paintings of angels, like Archangel Michael has these beautiful flowing locks, and he has this kind of a little bit of a feminine appearance, a little bit of a masculine appearance. And that really symbolizes the uniting of polarities within. And the idea that over time within ourselves, we balance out our masculine through masculine lives and feminine, or however any individual does that. And then we become more unified, essentially healing the split that occurred in Atlantis. So we actually heal that split through inner balancing of our masculine and feminine energies, our positive and our negative polarity. The Ida, the Pingala, the sun, the moon, the white sun, the black sun, however you want to, you can do different planets in there, whatever it is, but it's part of our being. And so we heal that split through this spiritual process over many lives. And it's a beautiful split, because it allowed us to understand nuance and understand detail that we don't really have when we were the more of the androgynous form. There's another element to it as well. So the first thing is that it could be, again, a misinterpretation and a misunderstanding of spiritual works. And sometimes, you know, groups will get their hands on material and they won't understand it. And if your mind is literalized, it's materialized too much, it's hyper-materialized, you're going to look at a spiritual process and you're going to think that this is a physical thing you need to do.
Oh yeah.
So that's what that you don't understand how to even get the mechanics going spiritually. It's like, what? I mean, I don't understand sometimes how to get the spiritual things going, you know? So it's like, so the easiest thing to do is to literalize it and say, oh,
not well, you, come on.
Yeah, right. So much time on it, you know? So it's like, it's so hard to do. And so it's totally understandable that, you know, we would literalize it and think it's a physical thing or primarily a physical thing when it's actually a mystery, a spiritual thing. The other thing that's really interesting, and this actually isn't something that I thought of. It's actually something that someone said that I cannot, maybe actually you said it, which is that if you take someone's positive and negative energies and you like invert them, then it makes them magically neutral. In other words, it makes it so they cannot be personally powerful because you're taking away their, it's like making them inert.
Yes.
So like if that can be done to society by confusing people in that way, it can somehow reverse the poles and make it so that they can't, because their mind is doing these strange things, it makes it so they're not magically powerful, that the Ida and the Pingala and all the channels aren't fully functioning. It's like they're rejecting their own or confusing their own, because we need that positive negative charge in order to spark.
They're not balanced anymore.
Yeah.
Oh, it's absolutely fascinating. You know, this is really interesting to me because, of course, the minute you bring it up in a traditional setting, everyone's on the watch for, like, oh, this is a hate thing against, you know, people who are trans, or, you know, it's an anti-gay thing or something like that. Not at all. If anything, it seems like those groups that are operating with transhumanism in the background are forcing this thing to the fore, and it's very uncomfortable for people in that strata because they're making them their, you know, their kind of political football to do this thing. And the thing that they're doing is bizarre. You know, they came out with something recently and said, oh, there's 48 different genders.
Yeah. You know,
just insane. And there are options. I mentioned this story a couple of X series episodes ago where I went in to update something on Facebook and they were like, we want you to identify your gender. And I thought I had done that when I started, but apparently not. And the choices there were so strange. You couldn't just check man or woman or, you know, male or female. You had to check, you know, all of these unusual branches of it, you know, like cisgender and these sort of terms. And that's how, if you didn't get past it, you couldn't list it. And so I ended up not being able to list anything. And but they're trying to force you into that thinking. So they're like, well, you know, everyone's going to use Facebook or everyone's going to use some social media thing. So we'll just get them talking like this. Eventually it'll just sink into their subconscious. And one generation later, boom, everyone will be like, hey, there's no gender, you know? So this is a program. And then the question is, why is that program coming down? What is the nature of the program about eliminating genders? What's the nature of the program of a Supreme Court justice saying, I don't know what a woman is?
I think it's eliminating all structures. I think it almost feels to me like all traditional structures have to be destroyed, including gender, including, and again, this has nothing to do with anyone being trans or being gay or being straight or being bi. This is something that is different. And we need to understand that, because we have to understand that some of the most vicious groups in society will hide behind minority groups and use them in ways. It's very sad and it's very sick, but that's very common.
Well, they're also just as likely to turn on them once the operation's done, you know, as we've seen before. You know, some of those people that are involved in racial justice and all that stuff, they turn very quickly against these racial different types of minorities as soon as they don't go along with the program.
It's divide and conquer. So any polarity that exists, let's divide and conquer. Let's divide men from women. Let's make women hate men and men hate women. Let's make people who have a different sexual orientation hate people who have a straight sexual orientation. You know, let's make people who like to be vegetarian hate people who eat meat. Let us take anything and make the war of all against all. And that includes sex and gender. Nothing is off the table for this narrative. It includes religion. You know, make people hate Jewish people, make people hate Christian people, make people hate, you know, whatever. It's just a divide and conquer narrative, and everything is
on deplorables.
And leave America and society a wreck, and then we can rebuild it the way that we want to, with the ideals that we want to.
And the problem is, this group is extremely dangerous, as you point out. They're not a large group. I've never seen any evidence, and I've talked to people who have looked at this, who've been in financial, political, and in kind of publishing media circles. And it doesn't seem to me that the actual group that does this is large. It's just that they are incredibly endowed with the means and the connections in order to pull it off, and also an incredible cleverness.
Yes, they've been strategic and made certain moves and lied and kind of cheated their way
right
into these positions of power, and they're kind of playing all their cards now.
Yeah.
So we may actually see this small group start to come forward as we make our way burning through all the middle management as they fight and expose themselves. But
right,
it is fascinating, you know, the idea that behind it all is probably some small group that's pulling all the strings, that's mega wealthy. It just makes you think.
And very sophisticated along the cult lines, yes, and intertwined with schools of a high esoteric order, but inverted again. That kind of Crowleyite, or even beyond Crowleyite, spin into those left-hand path schools of understanding. So when you get into the real dark, heavy corridors of that, you know, I'm not always in favor when people run around and say, oh, there's a political figure I don't agree with. Oh, they're a satanic pedo, and, you know, whatever. That's not what I'm talking about. This is different. I mean, there are Satanists involved, but it is a group that's worked along an occult track for centuries, and they just see this as their real coming out party.
This is the end game. And It is. This is like what they've been. And I even think sometimes, looking back, that maybe even these groups weren't so far apart at one point, but yeah, they just developed so divergently, and the ideologies just got so, you know, messed up that now we're here. And when you do look at it in the occult sense, though, there is a distinct difference between the schools, between how people operate, and the darker societies have been exploiting people's, you know, desires, people's fears, people's trauma, and they've been functioning off of creating chaos. And they'll create a bunch of chaos, and then they'll kind of lap it all up. It is very satanic because it's very antagonistic. It's fundamentally antagonistic.
Oh, yeah.
And thwarting, and they'll kind of come in, and then they'll clean it all up, and they'll take whatever they can and restructure it. But they function primarily from creating chaos.
Right. These are chaos magicians.
Just, they're chaos magicians. The problem with being a chaos magician is that it doesn't work in... it doesn't work long term, because at some point you have to work in precision.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be very, very, very precise. And you have to understand order. You have to understand natural order. And you have to understand very advanced spiritual concepts in a very integrated way. That chaos magicians fundamentally don't invest in or practice in. They're kind of like bullies that are betting against you all the time. And so there's going to come a time in our chaos that we're in, where the chaos magicians don't have the precision to lead. They don't have the precision to win. They have the precision to destroy because they're natural antagonists and to clean it up. And that's what they've been doing for centuries, thinking that it makes them, they think that because they've been able to insert chaos, that it makes them greater than what they are. But there is no great power in stealing, you know, lollipops from babies while they're sleeping. That's not a powerful thing to do. You know, that's a sick and weird thing to do.
You're right.
Like, you're not powerful.
Yeah.
Sick, right? Like, you're just literally going into a society with more knowledge, more occult knowledge for whatever reason, more power, more money, and you're just lording over them and stealing from that. Sick. There's nothing there. You, whatever it is, but there's no great occult. There's no great occult power in that. There's no achievement in that. Whereas when we get to the end here, we're going to see them lose precision because they don't really have a plan, because their plan all along has been fundamentally destroy everything and rob it and then try to put up some kind of system to keep it going.
So. Yes. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Well, it seems like progressively, even with, you know, never mind the huge ops that they've been threading together here. I mean, even in simple things, you know, even in Super Bowl performances, the whole culture needs to be brought down further and further with yes. every new thing. Like, there's no uplifting, you know, and even the version of the space program now has this Mars thing. It's got the weird personality of Musk attached to it. As you've pointed out also, that has to be kind of an immature thing wrapped around him and that, so that it can't be someone who's serious about, you know, wanting to lead us into space or something. But they have to be an ironic character, right? That everything has to be ironic or degraded, right? You know,
yeah, exactly.
Beyonce has to be a stripper, right? She can't just be a performer. And Hollywood has gone, you know, about that process. I mean, it's always been accused of being degenerate or whatever, but now it's gone from a level of, you know, creating dramas and things and controversy to just being this kind of, the more we learn about it, you know, this upside down world where the people in the system is corrupt. So I guess my question around all that stuff is, how do you thread the scenario that we're in after going through this subsequent societal degradation at the end here? So you've come through the COVID op recently. I won't even go into the old stuff like 9/11 and everything, but just in the modern way, COVID op, the Ukraine war, which they're raising the whole nuclear aspect with, and then bringing us into, you know, this whole thing with the UFO threat, which they're having hearings now next Tuesday, the 17th, and it's these Senate hearings. And the people that are chairing the hearings on UFOs are Rubio, who's a big neocon, Gillibrand, Adam Schiff, who was the guy behind all the Russian, you know, the false Russian collusion thing that they pulled on Trump and try to impeach him with. So all of these types are around it. And suddenly, you know, these weird representatives like Representative Carson are all interested in UFOs. Where is this going? Like, is this the thing that is leading into, you know, the UFO threat, the space president, all this stuff? Is that the next level that where they roll out of, you know, COVID and Ukraine and World War into blah, you know, this UFO threat aspect?
It really does feel that way. It really does look that way, where it was almost like, let's, over a period of 2 years, completely traumatize society. Let's lock them down. Let's make them fight with each other, like, over masks and vaccines and all this kind of stuff.
Right.
And then let's go to war and start introducing these savior figures and stuff like that, that are to do with space, you know. It really does feel like they're doing the, it really does feel like they have that last card in their hand like this, and they're just figuring out how they're going to play it, because they did the virus. They're doing war.
Yeah.
And now they got that last card, and they're just figuring out, you know, how can we do this? And they're kind of rolling out figures that are maybe disposable to them.
Yeah.
Or maybe embarrassed already, because if it doesn't go well, then they can just say, oh, well, this, why were you doing that anyway? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're weird. Wow, weird. Like, get out of here. And then they'll just do another one. You know? they just like, yeah, that was weird, Rubio. Like, meanwhile, they told him what to do. Right. You know? So they're just going to blame him and say, you know, God, what a kook.
Right. Remember Rubio's weird UFO threat thing? Yeah.
Yeah, weirdo. And in meanwhile, they'll just have, they'll roll someone else out with an agenda that works. Mm-hmm. They have to do it soon because, you know, aliens and UFOs have been trending on Twitter this week.
Yes.
You can tell that they're kind of angling it. You got the space president, Elon Musk, that was, you know, Wernher von Braun named him. Wernher von, you're the guy, you're the Mars guy, you know. So we've got all that. Everything is in place, you know. So we're just kind of all looking at each other like, when is the event going to happen, or when is it going to drop? But I think that they're really scared, because I think that they understand that when they really do an op like this, that it's going to be really hard to recover from if they do it wrong.
Everything has to be lined up ever so perfectly. This is fascinating. And we've discussed the fact that this may happen in a large public venue. And we'll get into that in another episode. But stay tuned on that one, because I think you're really onto something there.
Yes.
Absolutely fascinating. Gigi, incredible information. Wow. Your series, I want to say this also about your ideas, that you're bringing in so many different aspects that are original, but your interpretations around things like the mystery schools bring that to life. I almost get that hint of the 21st century mystery school in the work that you're doing. And the series are so interesting. In Plain Sight is one where you examined occult influences in public media, and the Mars Mysteries, you've done a series of episodes with that. We've touched on some of those tonight, but absolutely incredible. And of course, you have a series of teaching courses there at ggyoung.com. Do you want to say something about those?
Yeah, so I teach intuition development, which I have three courses in that, inner mystic protection, and then deepening intuition. And those are the foundations of intuition development. And then actually in the next couple of months, I'm going to be coming out with some more workshops like that, where I will help you develop your spirituality. I'll help you develop your gifts as well. We can do that together. You're not alone. And also I have a great online community where we talk about everything mystical. And I do 2 Q&As a month, which is about 7 hours. That doesn't go on YouTube at all. So there's also that.
There's all kinds of like hidden content for the things that you do. And I know people have taken those courses and they're absolutely transformed by them. Just amazing. And of course, you're a major contributor to everything we do at the X Series, and a tremendous ally for all of it. So thanks so much, Gigi. Absolutely cutting edge stuff. Just mind blowing. Whenever I think about the work that you do, you know, truly unique. And it's just, this is really the time for it. Unbelievable timing.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. It's always my pleasure to be here.
It's great to see you.
You too.
Gigi, just remarkable insight and information. The conversation will continue here, and we'll go deep on the transhumanist goal of space dominance in part 2. Of course, all of Gigi's work can be found at ggyoung.com, and join her YouTube channel. Just search for Gigi Young for new videos. Sign up for our newsletter at darkjournalist.com and join us on Fridays at 8 p.m. for the X Series. Keep your eyes on those eclipse skies. See you soon.